want to ask the first question?
And answer it yourself.
Thank you for a really good talk, Rudy. When you were talking about the conversational patterns, and if I've said anything wrong here, correct me, relationship to violence, you agreed that you didn't want to give a moral argument. As soon as you said that, I wrote down, well, Socialist Party has is a class issue. And then you went on to say you didn't really want to talk about class. Do you think that's a problem when I'm a member of this party? As far as I'm concerned, it's a class issue. Have you anything to say on that?
Yes, I do. I have something to say about everything. Oops. Well, I think Engels, at Marx's graveside, when he gave a little speech, and he said that Marx was not really the inventor or the original. I hope you've heard this before, right? But it was French historians who first came up with the notion of class, and you take it from them. I think Engels said that. I remember reading that about 50 years ago. But I'm going to leave that alone because you're not paying, if you like, homage to class because Marx said it.
No, certainly not.
You're not. I take your point.
As a member of the working class.
Yeah, I take your point. Well, there's a view that I call it SCLC. We should engage in semantic clarity and logical consistency. So when we use language, we should be clear in how we use words. I think you would all agree with that. It's something we should aspire to do, but it's not always easy to do it. And so people will notice that Marx himself never defined class. In fact, it's very difficult to define it. And it's not really... I think in Volume 3 of Capital, the manuscript breaks off when it comes to... That's a classic, when it comes to defining a class. And then along came Max Weber, in a way usurped, if you like, the Marxian notion, and defined class in a way that's different from Marx. It's very popular among sociologists. Marx's conception is bipolar, the working class and the capitalist class, basically those are the two basic classes in society. Weber identified a whole stream of different kinds of classes. But I think that, in fact, I've got a quote right here, somewhere at the bottom there. Can you... Don't bother. I think the notion here is that... Let me leave Marx alone. Here are some problems with the notion of class. Is one using it strategically or endemically? In other words, is one saying, let's use the notion of class in order to generate class consciousness and inspire people to work to change the system and usher in a classless society? That's a strategic usage. In other words, you're not going along with it. You're saying, we need to use it now in order to generate a mass movement to ultimately abolish a class system. So you expect the classes to wither away as you expect the state to wither away. That's one approach, and maybe that's what you're saying. On the other hand, there's a danger here. There are two major dangers. If you agitate for class consciousness, you're telling the bourgeoisie that you're going to get them. And that's very dangerous, because they're armed with teeth, and they've got legitimacy, and they'll snuff you out, which has been happening throughout the world. Because you're telling them, you represent the working class, that they're the enemy, you believe in class struggle, you're informing them of what you're going to do, that they're the enemy, and that you want what they have, their wealth and power. And surely if you're doing that, then you can't be surprised that they'll use the police, the army, the navy, the secret services, and so on and so forth, and a million cameras that are all over London, they'll use all of those things to make sure that you never, ever take their power away. You're scaring the hell out of them. You're telling them, we want what you have. You're warning them. You're letting them know you think they're the enemy. I think some great mind once said, never let the enemy know that you know he or she is the enemy. If you ever convince them of this, automatically you've got an enemy. You've created an enemy the moment you let people know they're enemies. And then you have to deal with the consequences. That's the first point, I think. So people who advocate class, strategically or non-strategically, actually create a class enemy that can destroy them. There's something else. If one can talk about class struggle, I think I saw a Socialist Standard there that said, we don't agree with war or struggles among people. And there was a very nice picture of the globe, which removed all the flags and so on and so forth, and said we are one species. I think I saw it here. It's very nice. And but we are for class struggle. And I thought, I have to talk this over with you. Because if you're for class struggle, then why are you hostile to gender struggle? Why can't you agree with the statement? Why would you not? Let me put it differently. Would you agree with a statement coming from, say, a Simone de Beauvoir or Judith Butler or one of the advocates of feminism, that the history of all hitherto existing societies, Communist Manifesto, first page, I think, is a history of male domination of women? Or why don't you agree with, say, Louis Farrakhan, that the history of all hitherto existing society is a history of the white race dominating or destroying or oppressing the colored races? In other words, if you're going to support class struggle, then how would you respond to people who say that you've got it wrong, that basically it's sexual struggles, gender struggles, that people of color and women are the pack horses of civilization, that they are the people who have been super exploited and oppressed? How would you respond to that? In other words, what we should do is generate women's consciousness. Women should be at the forefront for social change. Let's vote for Hillary Clinton. And of course, that's what she says. Or let's vote for Louis Farrakhan. Let's put black people in power, Barack Obama. And then we'll get social change. Because the real struggle today in the world is not between the working class and the capitalist class. It's between the white race and the colored races, or between men and women. So I'm suggesting that the moment one buys into that ethos or that principle of struggle among social groups, then one has to meet these arguments coming from people who identify different kinds of human beings or different kinds of social groups. And to my mind, those are some of the dangers. In fact, that's exactly what has happened. You will notice. I mean, you will notice, of course, that I was living here in the 60s when sociologists developed the notion of race and race relations in Britain. And now I'm back after 50 years, if you like, and I'm seeing that it's taking hold. So Goldsmiths College, London University, somewhere in Lewisham, had a session last week on black bodies and black Britain. And I thought, damn, nothing has changed. Not class. Race has gripped British society and ethnicity. People are defined when people come from Syria or other parts of the world, they're not called members of the working class, they're called Syrians. And everyone buys into it. So I'm suggesting that the moment we begin to divide people up in these different ways, maybe to foment and foster revolution, we open ourselves, we open the society, we open everything to, how do I put this, to an avalanche of different kinds of human beings being seen in society. And so we actually prevent the emergence of that class consciousness that we're trying to develop.
We'll come back to it.
Yes.
I would like to say, because I've understood what your answer, I do disagree with you. Number one, class issue, we are all involved. We know who we are, the majority of the world's population. We're on the ground. We don't have the internet, mobile phones. We don't have clean drinking water. But we do go to employment. We do work for a wage, a salary,
yes.
The mark of a slave.
Yes.
If that's not a class issue, I don't know what is. We meet women. Feminists and gender this and all the rest of it. We are members of the working class. We're going to have all those problems amongst us. But when we know that the capitalist class, those who own everything that we need to live, when we know that handful of people in every country around the world, and when we understand we have no country, we have a earth for all of us, and we do all the work, that's what we put forward. Maybe not as badly as I just tried to put it forward, but other members I'm sure will come forward with it. You know, class is the main thing as far as I am concerned. It's not about colour, it's not about being a woman, it's not about being disabled, it's whether you need to sell your labour in the 2015 when we don't need to. And anyone who tries to go away from that, I think, is a bit of an apologist.
I take your point.
There's so many issues out there.
Okay.
Bald men?
Bald men?
Or bald women? I mean, there could be loads of groups. It would never stop.
She's getting it here again.
Okay. A quick point. What about people who sell their labour power, as you put it, who are members of the working class, but they have pension funds and so on that are invested, their money, or they save their money in brokerage accounts that are invested and gain them a profit. A friend of mine told me that he invested $190,000 in HSBC, the bank there, and put that money in brokerage accounts, and 2 years later it was $250,000. So is that person capitalist or working class?
Well,
the money was invested.
But
By your definition, he is. But I'm saying that his money was invested in various parts of the world, exploited other members of the working class, clearly, and he made how much? $190,000 to $55,000, $50,000 in 2 years. Is that person a member of the working class or the capitalist class?
It's not a matter of how large the salary or how large the wage. It's a matter that it is a wage. That he's compelled to sell his labour.
But he's also an investor. He also invests his money.
The working class are employed in work all over the world that cause damage to ourselves.
No, but what I want to know is what would you, if the person sells his or her labour, but also invests money and gets a profit from that investment, where is that person? We've got to be clear here. Is that person still a member of the working class or is that person a capitalist?
Another member will answer you. You want clarity.
It's a duck bill platypus.
Pardon?
It's a duck bill platypus. It's between two different species. Anyway, two people got a question. You've got a question. Three people got a question.
It was a comment to add on to what has been said, if that's all right. More than one thing. Class is an economic identity, so the common identity, and it doesn't matter whether it's men, women, whatever, if you have that common identity that Jacqueline's referred to, where you need to work, and the fact that you may also have some savings, small amount, investments, or even the large amount that you mentioned,
yes,
doesn't alter your class position. The fact that there are workers who are members of the working class who are very well off, some that it's difficult to pigeonhole, it's not the main point. It's not the main point. The main point is the majority of people belong to the class that needs to work or is dependent on what is laughingly called benefits. That's all the same class. And the other point that you said about the problem with capitalists,
yes,
our enemies. Well, it's not the capitalists, it's the capitalist system that is our enemy, if you like. It's the system itself. We have no... There may be some despicable capitalists. There may be some of our fellow workers that we're not too keen on sometimes for their actions. But that is not the point. It is the system that is dependent upon the reduction of sale out of profit, the exploitation of the working class by the capitalist class. That is the problem. That is what we want to end. And as for them being able to stop it when the majority of people are after that change, the abolition, who are the policemen? Who are the soldiers? Who are these
okay
people who are going to who are going to stop it?
I take your point. Okay. But who would represent the working class, so to speak? In other words, do you think that the Bolsheviks in Russia in 1918 represented the working class? How would you decide who actually represents the interests of the working class? There's more to it than that. The fact that these people have a common relationship to the means of production, that is, that they sell their labor power, doesn't make them at all homogenous. In other words, there are different kinds of interests within that group that you mentioned. In fact, even conflicting interests. How would you therefore, why would one continue to call them the working class when clearly it has no great political significance because these members of the working class engage in internecine conflicts among themselves, defining themselves as blacks and whites and men and women. So how is the concept useful when clearly you see this dissipation of class consciousness within movements that claim to be representing the working class? There are many, many examples of this where so-called white working class people engage in various kinds of atrocities against other members of the working class. Just look at the United States today where clearly members of the working class are prepared to use violence against people from Mexico or anyone coming from south of the border. and look at the entire history of working class people engaging in similar acts of atrocities against people they call black. So while you may continue to define class and working class in an objective way by pointing to this common relationship to the means of production that they sell their labor power, then you also have to confront this problem of these individuals, why they have this homogeneous, I agree, common relationship to the means of production. Subjectively speaking, they do not share that homogeneity. In fact, on the contrary, the working class is rent with dissension and conflicts. How do you cope with that?
Yeah, indeed.
I totally agree with that last point you made. I think the problem we have in the parties, I think it's very much a class issue, but the problem we have is actually getting people to identify the fact that they are part of this working class, and that there are, we've been very cleverly divided. You know, I'm black. Well, there are plenty of black millionaires. I'm a woman, we're downtrodden. No, there have been plenty of nasty women in power.
Yes.
We don't identify. We have got this confusion where, well, I'm not really a member of the working class. I mean, we've got...
I'm a manager.
Socialist MPs saying we're all capitalists now. You know what I mean? How ridiculous is that? I think it is a problem. I think that we do have a problem in getting people to see the party case, and I think we do need to think about how capitalism affects everybody, even the capitalists themselves.
Yes, exactly.
And this is what we have to kind of work with, that it does affect everybody, and that we can all improve our lives. But people have false identities. We don't identify with, well, I'm okay, Jack. So we have to find in each individual, well, this is your life. How could it be better if it wasn't for the capitalist system? You know, you like to play tennis. You could spend a hell of a lot of time playing tennis if you didn't have to work 12 hours a day. You know, we've got to find a way of connecting with everyone. And I'd like to reiterate Pat's point about, the capitalists are not going to let us take over. No, they're not. But the army... And they are working class. They're part of us. It's only when they realise, when they get their proper identity, is when they're not going to be there to stop us.
Yeah, I think another way of defining working class is complete lack of political power. So you can be a very rich person, but you're still kind of working class because you've got no political power whatsoever. And so the illusion of money is very powerful because it can be taken away from you at any particular moment by maybe expensive retirement when you become elderly. There's so many ways of losing that money and losing all that wealth.
Okay, I have a question. I'm interested in purposes. In other words, I'm interested in endpoints. So, for example, if I advance a theory or a classification, I have a reason for doing so. And I want to get somewhere with that classification. So if I say that the conditions facing women in the world today are very significant politically, and we should organize for social change by seeking to mobilize women, given the fact that they're much more oppressed than men. I could point to a lot of facts, if you like, to demonstrate that. So I think if I'm going to use a classification like working class, I'd clearly specify, as I said, am I doing it strategically or am I doing it because I firmly believe that this class is necessary, it's inveterate, it can't be gotten rid of. In other words, what I want to ask here is, when will the working class not exist? When will it not exist? Because it seems to me that if you're going to use that concept, you should actually delineate the conditions under which there'll be no working class. So when will that happen? Could we point to the Soviet Union and what happened in their revolution, as, because people will do that, as an example, an illustration of the termination of the end of the working class? In other words, can we say that the Bolsheviks or workers' councils in Yugoslavia did away with the working class? When will the working class not exist?
When it has political power.
Well, I think one ought to be careful there when you say, because it does have political power now. There's a difference between having power and using it.
One can say, the working class have no power whatsoever. They don't own the system of education, which education is all. They don't own the system of our parliament, which is not a democracy. And that is completely ruled by a very excluded little set of people.
Yes.
Until the actual working party have, the working people have actual political access and can execute, have political thoughts and have those realised, then that's the only point when it will end.
But is it odd that you say it doesn't have power? When it's in trade union movement, it has the right to vote. It can decide to vote. It can decide to vote for members of the SPGB, or to vote for David Cameron. I think we shouldn't confuse the possession of power with the use of power. I think one can claim that the working class is not using its power, but to say that it has no power, to my mind, can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You can be actually telling the working class in Britain that, look, it's hopeless. You don't have power. You're being dominated by the capitalist class or by the bourgeoisie, and you lost. So shouldn't you? It would be better to say you do have the power, but you're not using it.
Yeah, I mean, in legal terms, we
don't. Okay, see, lots of hands. I better be quiet.
What I was going to say is, we'd answer the question slightly differently from our friend over there. Working class will disappear when you have common ownership of the means of production. But everybody's got the same relationship to the means of production. There'll be no capitalist class and no working class. So.
And over there also.
Yeah, the working class does have political power.
Of course.
It has it now. It's just that they're not exercising it in the way that we think they should. You know, a lot of people who are MPs in Parliament are working class people. Okay, a lot of them aren't. A lot of them are millionaires. But quite a lot of them are members of the working class. And the way I define that is somebody who needs to sell themselves to an employer in order to live. That's how we define working class. Those that don't need to do that, whether they're investors or not, those who don't need to sell themselves to an employer for a wage or salary, are not members of the working class. They're members of the capitalist class. It's not a question of political power, it's a question of having class consciousness.
Correct.
And understanding.
Correct.
of what we need and where we need to go. And it's only then, when the working class have that power, that they will be able to introduce a society of common ownership. And this is what we're aiming for. This is why that situation didn't exist in Russia or anywhere else. Because not only were the conditions not right for socialism, but the working class, and quite often, especially in the case of Russia, were not in a majority anyway, did not have an understanding of what socialism was, or actually, you know, knew or wanted to introduce it. So that was the other reason why socialism wasn't possible in Russia at the time, that the working class were in a minority, and even if they weren't, they didn't have an understanding of what socialism involved.
The comrade there has just said exactly in the last sentence what I wanted to say.
But it's what he said in his talk.
It is the lack of understanding of how this system operates. The working class has no idea how capitalism works against them. We try and let them know how capitalism works. And more divisions and all this. We say class issue. We're all in it together. Even though we act against ourselves sometimes. But I feel that our response is correct, accurate and logical. And is the only way for a sustainable society, a whole world proposition, which I heard from this comrade here. Thank you.
I think that in 1870, British working class got 3 times world average. And now it gets 2 times. Therefore, British working class. But there are a higher number of specialists in the British working class than in the world. Therefore, this ratio of 3 in 1870 has become 2, yes? And they should get more, but not 2 times. Therefore, we can hardly say that the working class of Britain is exploited. It is a petty bourgeois nation. And, for example, it gets double the worker of Britain gets double the worker of Europe. You know? Therefore, these differences, they were landowners mostly farm workers, developing countries. These got more than they should in 1870. It's still a little bit more, or nearly they are not exploited yet. If these, due to higher rate of profit, these differences diminish, these nations, developed countries, all developed countries become radical. And what Marx predicted was socialism will be established first in developed countries. This is one of his predictions. And the other was world socialism happens. What happens is not exactly predicted.
Oh, please go ahead.
So he's making the point that working class here are sharing the exploitation of the working class in other parts of the world. But
I think it's interesting listening to the comments here, because the question for me now would be, is it possible for you among yourselves to reach a consensus on what is the working class? Because I'm getting the impression that you haven't, and that it's, I don't think you can. The reason I don't think you can reach a consensus on what is the working class is because the great minds who invented the category themselves didn't reach a consensus on what's the working class. Moreover, I just noticed something. You can define the working class objectively speaking. You can say, if I ask you to define what class, you'll say, well, I'm defining class in terms of relationship to the means of production. Those who own the means of production are capitalist class and those blah, blah, blah. Fine. And then, of course, I can ask you, well, what relevance has this to your purpose of decommodifying the economy? What relevance has this definition to your political organization? Does that mean that when you speak to people, you'll first ask them, do you work or do you own capital? And if you discover that they own capital, you will say bye-bye. And then if you discover that they work for a living, you'll say, let's talk. Are you going to exclude certain people from your conversation? Merely, but that's a question I'm asking. Well, it's important because clearly, if you are going to talk to people who own the means of production automatically, you're talking to people against whom you struggle. Because by definition, in fact, I think it's a socialist standard, you are now involved in the struggle against people who own the means of production. You're partisan. You've taken a certain side. You've already decided to exclude certain people, those who own the means of production. And you're reaching out to your comrades, so to speak, who don't own the means of production. Isn't that dangerous? Why that exclusion? After all, it could be that the people who own the means of production, it could be just a small business person who's struggling to make ends meet, doesn't have a great profit margin, and is trying to obtain economic security through investing in a small business. Are you going to exclude that person?
We'll talk to anyone.
Pardon?
We'll talk to anyone.
We don't exclude anybody. We don't exclude anybody.
No, but
predominantly, the interests of the movement towards a world of common ownership is predominantly in the interests of the overwhelming majority, the working class, as we see it, predominantly. Okay, capitalists will benefit as well, no doubt. And this party has had capitalists in it as members, and maybe still has. But predominantly, the appeal is to members of the working class who have to sell themselves for a wage or salary to an employer.
Okay, I have a question. Why do you think it's necessary to identify people in the first place and locate them, identify them, and name them in terms of the economic circumstances? In other words, I want to know, why do you think it's necessary to do that?
Well, actually, being in a better category, Marx in a better category, that we observe history and how race has come up to our observe classes or just ways of describing what social divisions arrive for human beings. For example, we have, go back to ancient times, we had slavery between slaves and slaves. Now, that's an objective fact. People owned chattels.
Yes.
The New World of America. And the only way that to end that system is that the slaves had rebellions, that slave rebellions, after the North American escape, trying to escape from the runaway from the Caribbean.
Yes.
Or sometimes the British rebellions in Haiti were actually threw up the defeated the armies of France and Spain. Developed
isolated or managed to take control. That was an objective fact. Nobody invented it. Nobody said, oh, well, or capitalized use of slavery, or capitalized use of slavery. It existed. That's a fact. And except for the feudalism. The only way feudalism was eventually give way to capitalism was because of the philosophy of privatization. It was because of a group of merchants and lawyers, people that they called the third estate at the time, found they couldn't advance their interests because they're restricted by the guild system, the feudalism, by the tithes, so that they needed their own state, which was to advance their own economic interests, small business merchants, in essence, as a capitalist class. So they simply sort of forced them to become revolutionaries, that were, just like slaves of antiquity. They've been advanced within feudalism, they said, get rid of it. So, of course, they got the least work class on their side. That's why the French Revolution, the English Revolution before that, and overthrow feudalism, they had to get rid of the feudal relationships. So, that's an objective fact. They had no choice but to do that. What was the effect? What's evolved now is basically two classes now, or capital class and working class. So we can philosophize, but it exists the working class. It's just, going to capitalism. I've experienced problems, sort of set of problems, unemployment, insufficient wages, even those are high wage, they get problems with alienation. They sometimes they suffer stress related. They have not full control of their own lives. As you say, there's different categories of workers. It's true, a lot of workers don't see eye, but we don't see themselves as a white class, but white collar workers are totally different from blue collar workers.
Are you saying that white collar workers are different from blue collar workers?
No, I'm saying they see themselves as different. They're not. Well, I was going to argue that, but it's not the same problem. So, like, for example, I come from an IT background, and about 20 years ago, jobs were plentiful, and you asked for, well, 30 years ago, you could ask for what salary you want, practically, but now, discovering outsourcing jobs to India, cheaper places, like the manufacturing. Same thing, IT is what they have, a lot of life on jobs happen to the manufacturing, but manufacturers. Like shipbuilders all gone to Korea, places like that, look from the West. Same thing's happening now with IT, so I've got unemployed program, probably something. Just can't find jobs because they've all come to India. So it's all the same problems. And you've also had instances where white collar workers have been forced to go on strike, but in the public sector, even well paid work, so high pay themselves have done industrial action against their employer. So, at some point, what we believe is our work class be forced to become revolutionary. At the moment, our most best performance, but at some point, if they want to pursue their interests, they have to recognize that to get rid of the capitalist system. That's what this is.
Okay, while there's been an actual break, we'll pass this round. We want to use money to get rid of money, so we want to use class to go to class.
We have to identify with each other because individually we have no power.
When you say we, what do you mean?
As a class. I can identify with another woman. I can't necessarily identify with a black woman.
Oh, sorry, can you repeat that slowly?
I can identify with another woman.
Yes.
I can't necessarily identify with another black woman, depending on where she's from. But we are all members of the working class. This is what we can all identify with. Even if we can't identify with each other on our basic experiences, our world experiences, our life experiences, there's one life experience that we can connect with, and that is we're all in the same economic position.
Can I comment on that very quickly? I think this transition from stating, if you like, an objective condition, that we all sell our labor power, let's call that an objective condition, right? Most of us here go to work in the morning, and some of us don't have to. I don't say most of us, but I agree, most people in Britain go to work every morning, and that's the vast majority of people, and some don't have to. Or if they do go to work, it's only to count their money, or they own factories and places of their employed people, And I suppose that's what you're saying. Objectively speaking, you can divide the population into those who own the means of production and those who don't, or those who get their living from wages and those who get their living from profits, right? I suppose that's where you're going with that. But suppose I were to say that, with reference to what you just said, you said you can identify with other members of the working class, but not necessarily with a black woman, so to speak. Did I read you correctly?
I can identify, yes. If she is a black working class woman,
yes,
it's the class that we all identify with.
I take your point.
That is my
I understand.
My connection.
But you see, I really want to know the purpose of these identifications. In other words, where are you going with this?
The purpose is to change the world.
The purpose is to change the world. Okay, I take your point. The purpose is to change the world. But
only the working class can change these.
The bourgeoisie is
not going to do that uncomfortable.
But let me go slowly here. What happens when or if this woman or this man, a black woman or a black man, says to you, off with you, white people are the most racist people in the entire world, and especially the white working class. So I'm going to form my own organization as a black woman and off with you and your talk about world revolution based on this common ownership of the means of production. What are you going to say?
It's not going to change anything.
But what I'm saying is that your appeal to this black woman on the basis of a common ownership or non-ownership of the means of production is ineffective in terms of getting the working class identity and unity you need in order to overthrow capitalism. What I'm saying in the end is that this basing your policy or your desire for revolutionary change on class, objectively defined in terms of non-ownership means of production, is necessarily ineffective, because the moment you do that, then you leave, and I said it before, you leave black people capable of saying to you, I'm not with you because you white working class people have been most racist, and they can give you a million examples. And then there'll be black women who'll say the same thing, and there'll be Polish people who've come here who, look, I talk with them often, and they complain, and they say it's not so much race, but certainly it's ethnic. And then we can go all the way back to Marx and Engels, who identified that competition within the working class is a major obstacle to unity among the working class. They identified that. I don't think they found a solution. I don't think they managed found a way out of that problem. But they did emphasize that what maintains capitalism is essentially competition itself within the working class. New workers, old workers. Young workers, old workers. Female workers, male workers. So what's the usefulness of this concept if it clearly isn't getting you where you want to go? Where you want to go, it seems to me, is a large body of people, not just large in terms of numbers, large in terms of numbers, of course, but above all, having a particular kind of consciousness, a particular set of aspirations, a recognition of, if you like, of what is the enemy, and a strong desire to change things. Do you need a concept of class to do this? I don't think so. I think you can persuade people to be like that without necessarily telling them that they belong to the working class. Yes, ma'am?
Well, you see, the great power that the state has, that the system has, is this divide and rule. And this is the problem, that people are divided. But part of that reason for that division is the lack of security, is the worries about over their employment, over
yes.
jobs, that they're coming to take our jobs, you know, like yes, we have course. Some right to the jobs,
yes,
and,
exactly. yes.
and so on. It is that divide and rule which gets in the way of the common identity that all these people have, the black, white, you know, spotted, whatever, is the need for security, the need for the job, the need for access to the means of life,
yes.
which they can't get except by selling the mental and physical abilities. And people with small businesses aren't any different, to rest of workers. Most of them are bona fide members of the working class serving the interests of the system, helping to get, you know, goods to people, if they're whatever, they're part of the part working class, part of the system.
Well, thank you, but I'd still like to ask you to actually show me, if we understand where we want to go, which is we want to have a particular kind of awareness, political awareness. We want people to understand that what is necessary is the abolition of wage labour. Or let me put it differently. What is necessary is the production of goods rather than commodities. To have an economic system whose purpose is to produce goods to gratify human needs, to make the requirements of life abundantly accessible to every single human being. Human being, not just class. So I think there's a certain ambivalence here. I see people talking about, I hear rather, people talking about the need to construct an economic system in which there will be a non-exclusive access to the means of life for every single human being, right? Human being. But then I hear them also talking about the need to organize the working class. Is there something wrong with that? Because after all, we create the people we talk about. It seems to me if the ultimate goal is to construct a global economic order in which the purpose of production is to have everyone have access to the means of life, all human beings throughout the entire world, then it seems to me that the concept of class is not consistent with that. It's not relevant to that. We should say to human beings, look, this system is anti-human. It will keep you in limbo forever and ever. Yes.
No, but you see that the class identity, it's a means to an end. Understanding the class identity, and then it's to put an end to the class system. And so that then it isn't a world of human beings just working in corporations.
If I understand you correctly, what you're saying is socialists should appeal to everybody.
Yes.
All human beings.
Yes.
And organise
on
the basis of human beings and not on the basis of
class.
Class is the biggest section of human beings. I mean, so you still want to organise to get socialism, but not on a class basis, but on a basis of appealing to all human beings. I think that's what you're
And right. I very quickly, and I want to say that it seems to me that that approach would be more productive in terms of attaining our goal, because, for example, there's no doubt there are two major threats to human existence apart from commodity production. War, I heard you. War, and of course, pollution, ecological destruction. Our home is being destroyed, our, as a species. And I think we should start, it's not class, it's our home as human beings, as a species, it's being destroyed. You can say it's being destroyed by capitalism, but it seems to me that we should perhaps go back to Socrates, who argued that evil is the other side of the coin of human ignorance. So it's not so much that the capitalist class is our enemy. Ignorance is our enemy. We should educate all individuals. And we shouldn't use a language that tells certain people, not so much that we don't want to talk to you, but essentially, you are part of the problem. No, all of us are part of the problem, because all of us are ignorant. All of us don't know enough. So I think our enemy is ignorance, rather than the capitalist class.
It's only 1% we want to exclude.
Pardon?
It's only 1% we want to exclude.
Yeah.
It's only 1% you want to exclude. I take it back.